Hello, welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. This episode, it'll be a recording from an Instagram live that I did recently with Macy Sutantio from Autism Career Pathways, where we both discuss autism representation in TV and media, where what we've liked about it so far, like shows that have done a good job with certain things, and certainly a lot of constructive criticism as well, in terms of what is still lacking and what we feel like movies and shows need to do better in terms of getting an accurate, non stigmatizing portrayal of autism out there. So I'll be attaching a big part of that recording. It's about an hour. This will be a little over an hour, but it's a really good content. It's a really good conversation I had with Macy, so I hope you enjoy it.
Okay, so now we are live.
Cool.
And if there's any problem, Pete will text me. So let's do a quick introduction. So why don't you go first, George?
Okay, my name is George Gund. I am an autistic actor and podcaster and advocate, also a board member at Autism Career Pathways. I have so my podcast is called Unpacking Neuroqueerness, and I talk a lot about the autistic experience from my perspective, and then also from the perspective of many guests I've talked to. And one of the things I talk about occasionally is autism representation in TV and film, which Macy and I will be talking a lot about today.
Yes. So I love watching, of course, autism related reading, watching autism related stories and articles. So and oh, my name is Macy Scantio. I'm the founder of Autism Career Pathways, a nonprofit in San Francisco Bay Area with a mission to reduce barriers to employment for autistic and neurodivergent people. So that's me, and I'm an openly autistic, late diagnosed adult, also with ADHD traits. So, George, so why don't you take the lead? Which show or film are we going to discuss first?
So I was thinking we could start by talking about the film Ezra that just came out a couple months ago. Macy and I actually both saw it together. And so my general thoughts about the film were, I think I'll start with the positive. I think compared to most of what we've seen out there so far, they did do a better job, first of all, with authentic casting, with casting an actually autistic actor. And I think the main two things that are really important about that are not only to show people that autistics can be actors and autistic actors exist and are out there and should be hired, especially over neurotypicals, but also for these specific roles, because and that leads me to the second reason, which is that you end up getting a much more accurate portrayal of autism from the inside, and only an autistic actor compared to a neurotypical actor would be able to really have that lived experience perspective, which can be really valuable when trying to do an accurate representation of an autistic character. And so first thing, I'll commend them for that. They did put effort into autistic casting. And the second thing I'll say is that it did feel like it felt like it was a little more of an inside perspective of telling them telling the story through the boy Ezra, it did feel like we did get to kind of see his experience, or at least more of his experience from the inside compared to other shows or movies where we've seen more of the outside perspective. And I like the compassion, and I like that he's a likable character, because a lot of it shows him, he's like a kind young boy with a brain that works differently and is often misunderstood. And I feel like a lot of times, and I'll get to other shows down the line, but there are certain shows and movies that I've seen where it's really saddening that the autistic character is like made to be unlikable or made to be arrogant or rude.
Silly, silly, yeah, awkward, right.
And it's just like it tends to be a very not only outside view, but it tends to be like very stereotypical, and in the sense of just very like what like very cliche, and I don't know, I guess that would be getting into the other shows, but anyways, and that leads me into what they could have done better, which is I feel like, okay, the two main things, and then I'll let Macy get to her opinions of it, but the two main things that I didn't like about it were there's still this kind of vibe of them trying to teach Ezra to do things in a neurotypical way. Like, for example, there's one scene where they're eating dinner, I think, and Ezra, it comes up that Ezra has a hard time with metal forks, because they're eating dinner at someone, I won't spoil too much of the story, but they're eating dinner at someone's house, and it comes up that metal forks are kind of a sensory overload for him. And I think that was another really good, that was a good nuanced representation of what sensory overload can look like. And like that it can be things like as small as a fork. But anyways, what happens is the person, the host, suggests getting a different fork so that Ezra would not have a hard time. And then his dad says something like, "No, he needs to get used to it," or something like that. And that I didn't like, because that's very trying to change the autistic person instead of accommodating. And then the other thing that I didn't like was they focus a lot on also, because I understand that they think it's coming from a good place, but they want to teach him eye contact. And it's the same kind of thing. Like, there's a reason why autistics are averse to eye contact, and I think a lot of neurotypicals still don't understand that it's because of the sensory overload. Like, I've always, and I didn't even realize because no one had ever communicated it to me, but it just makes so much sense now that I've always felt like since I was a kid, I just have, it's uncomfortable to look in people's eyes because it gives me this sort of overload. And another thing, and that this can also be related to ADHD, is it can make it harder to focus. I've heard this from a lot of other autistic people too, that if we're just putting, because we're constantly being told to look more at people's eyes, and if we look too much, focus too much on their eyes, we end up, that takes away our focus from what they might be communicating to us. And so, yeah, that's another thing that it bugged me a bit, because there's this whole scene around, they have this encounter. He goes to a farm, and then there's this scene where they're running around, and him and another, this young girl that he befriends, and there's a horse, and there's this whole moment where he the girl was like convincing him to look into the eyes of the horse, and then she says something like, "The eyes are the door to the soul," or something like that. I can't remember, but it's something that neurotypicals like to say a lot, and that it just it's very neurotypically biased, because for autistics, eye contact is uncomfortable, and it's actually we communicate better without the eye contact. So it was this kind of whole like teaching him thing. And anyways, there's something else I thought of, but I don't want to like I want to open it up to Macy a little bit, so I want to let Macy say what she thought.
For people who have not seen the movie, and the movie's not playing anymore at the movie theater, so if you haven't seen it, you have to wait until it's on Amazon Prime or some other channels. I think the summary of Ezra, it's about family relationship and raising an autistic teen who is really, he's at that age where he's really exploring his self-identity anyways, because he's a teenager, but he is in a school where they don't really know how to support him. And of course, whenever your kid is reported to be acting out in school, then that triggers like stress in parents as well. So in this situation, the parents were divided, and Ezra and his dad went on an adventure together. And that's basically the premise of the movie, is about that, what Ezra and his dad learned when they were together. So I think this movie had a consultant who was very well versed in doing disability related, neurodivergent related movies. So that I think that was really helpful. What stood out to me is just one is as parents, you have to experience your autistic kids' life in general, not just school, but life outside of school, and just trying to look at it from the lens of your autistic family members' eyes, right? So, because otherwise it's like talking a two different
Two different
languages,
languages.
and you can never you always like at odds because you're not speaking the same language, even though the topic is the same. So that makes it really hard and emotional, not in a positive way. So that's my takeaway from it. And about what you were saying about the teaching part, I think that's very common that when someone has a diagnosis, you're automatically put in that category of the behaviors need to change, whether it's a little kid, a teenager, or adults. You're still being treated like you need to change to be more like people your age, other people's norms, the majority of people. So that's, I think it's very unfortunate, which is why you and I are advocates trying to educate to change this, because we will never win the ratio in the game. We're always outnumbered. There are more people who have many things in common, as opposed to if you're autistic or ADHD, you're non-speaking. You're just very, very different in so many different ways, right? So that's what I thought about the movie. I think it has a lot of positives, I think, because the adults did learn in the end, and Ezra was able to find his a better place for him at that age. So yeah,
overall I did like it. Like I would still recommend people see it, because I think it does give a different picture than we had seen until now. Yeah.
So Ezra is the latest movie. Maybe we should talk about the first one. What? Was it the 80s? Rain Man.
Was it Rain Man?
Because that was the first movie that got a lot of attention. But now that we know more about neurodivergence and autistic people, do you remember The Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman?
I do, but it's been like a long time since I watched it. Yeah. But I do know that the main criticism of that one is the portraying like the savant trope of like all autistic people are like savants. And it's also like a white male, like it's which isn't to say that those autistics don't exist, but it reminded me kind of the Big Bang Theory and the Good Doctor, which I do have notes on. But before that, I wanted to ask if you remember more of the movie and if you have any notes on it too.
Yeah, so the cliches remain the same, like in terms of autism in films and TV shows. I think the idea that autistic people should have a very specialized and extraordinary skills that no one else has. So there are many movies, right, that's really the theme. The Accountant is one with Matt Damon, that he has this amazing, well, accountant, being accounting numbers. And I think with Rain Man, I'm trying to think what was his, I think he could remember calendar or date, something like that, very, very well. Now, I think it's never explained when people do autism movie about autistic people, and they put the focus on savant skills that it's actually not very common in the autistic population. So I certainly don't have any, I can't remember numbers for sure because I'm number dyslexic, so that's actually a misrepresentation, I feel, about autistic people in general.
Yeah, I think it also gets played up because, like, a lot of us have very intense special interests.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of gets misinterpreted. It's like, oh, because this person, like, for example, I know a lot about weather. So they're like, oh, he knows a lot about weather. So he's, like, this super genius. And then they expect me to know everything about, like, everything in science. And I'm like, I know a lot about the weather, but not about, like, I don't know, geology or, like, rocks like that. I don't know as much. I still find it interesting, but, like, there are people that
So that's Rain Man, and I think things have changed a lot since then. So we have many, many, many movies and TV shows, right? The common one that I actually have enjoyed watching a little bit with my family is Atypical. So with the main character, he was really into penguins.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Now the lead actor is not actually autistic.
Yeah, that's my main... That's one of my main critiques of it. If I were, that's the main.
Yeah.
And The Good Doctor was the same, but
correct.
Yeah, Atypical. So should I start? Okay. So yeah, I'll start by the positives, like just like Ezra. So in general, I remember relating to it too. It's also a show that when I was younger, like I had my diagnosis already, but I didn't have like I still my family still called it Asperger's because since I was diagnosed before 2013, and none of us really had access to the information that we do now. And I just remember relating a lot to like certain, just like Sam and like Sam's experience, like just certain things about like the way he communicated, and he was very direct, and he had like a special interest in penguins. And it was hot, like other people were would misunderstand him, and like they would think that he's weird. And it's just, I just remember like that kind of feeling, like as I was watching it, like what part of what drew me to the show so much in the beginning was like, it wasn't even like just what he said or how he acted, but it was like how he felt and like the situations that he would get into, and like how other people would act towards him, and like how other people would think of him or like about him. That I've related to a lot. I think the other thing that I liked about that show was they made him a likable character, kind of like Ezra. You know, he was like this kind young boy, like you can like he's likable, like they don't make him like arrogant like Sheldon, like they make him a very mean sometimes. And he anyways, well, I'll get to that later, but I like that they make him likable. They don't make him like this unlikable or like bad like character. And there's also the special interest, like Macy mentioned, he has a very strong special interest in penguins, and that was really cool to see, like his special interest, and like how he would go on info dumps and he'll like start talking about penguins, and he'll talk about it, like about all the details and everything, and he'll go on. Like, that's another thing I related a lot to, even though his like interest is penguins and mine is weather. I was like, just like the that feeling of being so excited about something and wanting to share as much as you can about, like when people open that topic, it just like just dump info dumps. And that I thought was really good. And then I also felt like one thing that that show did really well with like showing the internal experience is there is this meltdown scene on a bus that he has early on, I think first, maybe second season, but it's pretty early on. And it, I think they actually did a pretty good job in that scene of showing the sensory overload and also the emotional overload. Because if I remember correctly, he was struggling too because he had a crush on his therapist, and he was like having all sorts of emotions about that, and he wasn't sure how to control those emotions. It was just overwhelming him. There was the emotional overload and there was the sensory overload. And I think when people think of like a meltdown, I think a lot of people think automatically just of sensory overload, which can be one main trigger of a meltdown, but I've noticed too, at least for me, that emotional overload can really play into it too. Like sometimes you're just so caught up by something emotionally and it can cause that meltdown. And I think they did a pretty good job of showing not just the meltdown, but the lead up to the meltdown, because that's a very important thing for people to show. And then, now just I'll go over the negatives. And so in the very first episode, there's this moment that Sam's mother Elsa is having a conversation with his therapist Julia, And Julia said something along the lines of that autistic people don't know how to date the right way, or something like that. And I remember right away when I heard that, especially as I was rewatching the show, because I didn't really notice these little nuances until I went to rewatch the show years later after I had already dug into the neurodiversity world. And then I was like, it's like they're treating it's kind of still like that outside view. And I think a lot of this comes from not having authentic casting and probably advisors. I even heard that they might have consulted with Autism Speaks, which
Oh
we all know as a very
no.
non-autistic friendly organization. And it showed that they're kind of like thinking of it as the problem, or like thinking of the neurotypical way as the right way, and that like they're just not acknowledging that there are autistic cultures and autistic love and autistic ways of connecting, and that it's even been shown in studies that autistic people connect better autistic to autistic than neurotypicals do neurotypical to neurotypical. And the big disconnect happens in between neurotypicals and autistics a lot of times, because it's like different languages. And anyways, I can attest that I'm in a relationship with an autistic person now, and we get along really well. It's going really well. But also what's so cool about it is that even though we're different and we have our own separate experiences, we think of a lot of things in similar ways, and a lot of things about our communication styles are more like in line than I've ever felt with the neurotypical partners. So that's another thing to mention. And then the other main thing that I didn't like also coincidentally happens to be something that his therapist says. This time she says it to his father. She opens up about, so the therapist opens up about her brother being autistic, and she calls him not as high functioning as Sam. So she uses functioning labels, and that implies it not only invalidates the struggles of autistic people that are high maskers and are like suppressing a lot of their traits and the burnout, but it also invalidates autistic people with higher support needs that are categorized as low functioning just because they need different kinds of support to function in society, and there end up, is that same kind of like pathology paradigm. And then she also talks about, she says that it's nice, she said it's nice to pretend that nothing is wrong. And that was one thing, probably the thing that upset me the most, was like, nothing is wrong. Like you, like, what do you mean? Like, but it's because nothing is, it's just a different way of communicating. You just, maybe some people need more support, but there's not anything wrong with it. And it's just like this whole like tragedy burden vibe. Oh, like it's nice to pretend there's nothing wrong, like as if the person had just been diagnosed with cancer. And I'm like, no, like it's not a disease. So yeah, like those are my positives and negatives, and back to you.
You made me remember this is not a movie. It's well, it's a show, Love on the Spectrum. So that one is about specifically about autistic people and dating. And I only watched one season because there was one part that really bothered me was the background music. And whenever they were awkward moments for one of the autistic people who were out having their first date, First date is awkward for everyone,
Oh yeah.
right? Like, come on, you know this, George.
I know,
And
yeah.
to the awkward silences
Yeah.
was always filled with like some kind of tune,
Yeah, I didn't like that they
right?
did that.
And I was very bothered by it. I'm like, I mean, because I've been in that position on the
Yeah.
first day, and it was very difficult,
Yeah.
right? So it's not joke. It's not. It's no joke. It was like really difficult.
Yeah. Exactly. It's kind of like it feels like they're making fun of the characters or the not the characters, but you know, the people that are dating. But it also it's like the whole show, like I've also heard critiques about like how they edited it, like they edited certain parts to look even more awkward than they do. And there's also this kind of vibe of infantilizing the autistic people and kind of like, oh, look, these little autistics, and we're teaching them how to date like neurotypicals. And then it like the neurotypicals are like heartwarmed by it. And then people will tell me like you should watch this show, and I'm like, that's for you guys. That's like what you guys think of us, for you guys to like, I don't know, like
Yeah, so I was thinking it would also be really good tonight, instead of just maybe giving negative feedback or criticism to all these films and TV series, if you and I could imagine like a redo. For Love on a Spectrum. Let's say you and I, went out for a date, and of course there were awkward silences. What could replace the silly music if you were the director, George?
That's a good question. I think what a good thing to show would be the internal thought process. I think what would be really good, as a matter of fact, would be show exactly what's going on inside the person's head. Like maybe even like a voiceover, like the person isn't talking, but either a voiceover or a closed captioning of like, oh, like should I talk about this? Should I talk about that? Is this too long? And then the kind of like the whole masking dynamic too, like, oh my God, do I look weird? Am I taking too long? Oh my God, should I? Like, I've always related a lot to scenes in movies and shows where it's like showing the internal processing, and I think that would be something really relevant to
Yeah,
show.
that's true. That's
Yeah.
very clever. I mean, I would just, if there is an awkward silence, because I work with autistic people, and I know that when we are just trying to get to know each other, it's like there were awkward pauses, right? I would just say, I would validate that. I would just say, you know what? Take the
Yeah.
time to
Yeah.
think about what you want to say. If you don't want to respond to this particular topic, that's okay too.
Yeah.
So validate that need to
To
just go through your
process.
internal
Yeah.
Rolodex or whatever you're
Exactly.
trying to, like, put the words together, and it's taken
Yeah.
some time. I think that that would be, I would acknowledge that to validate,
Yeah,
right?
definitely. Yeah. And this reminds me even of something that not related specifically to the show, but something that people tend to misunderstand a lot about autism is like the thing with hyperempathy and having a shutdown. And so like neurotypicals will usually display empathy by like saying something encouraging or supportive or like consoling or like reassuring. And what I felt like happens to me, and I feel like it's happened to other autistics too, is I'll feel like this, I'll know that the person is upset or sad or emotional about something. But that feeling is just so intense to me that it's hard. I kind of shut down sometimes because I have to process it. And then because I'm not doing anything or saying anything, I'm just kind of trying to take in all this emotional input. That makes me kind of shut down. And then that makes people misunderstand that as me not having empathy or me not caring
Oh, being
and
rude.
being rude,
Right,
exactly.
right. But also, to your point, when you're feeling all these emotions, we're also absorbing the other person's reactions, how they react and how they're feeling. Right? So that feeds into that anxiety. So you're already a big ball of fire mass, and it just, it's like it's gonna explode,
And
right? And that's it's it just and sometimes we do need to explode. Like, I think the good thing about sensory meltdown is you just like let out your steam, and you need that to like calm down and go back to a more regulated state, right? Yeah.
I feel like it's just misunderstood
Right.
a lot.
Now, drama, big emotional expression cell in films and TV shows, right? So, but it's never explained what goes on. I would love to see that being represented if they're movies about us, right? So it's not just like you have this embarrassing, like super emotional, like meltdown, and then the next day you go to work, right? It's not like that.
It's not
Yeah,
like
so
that.
you and I talk about the Attorney Woo, the Korean, it's the very first Korean drama about autistic people that became a global sensation. It was very well received in Korea as well as everywhere else because it was on Netflix. So if you guys haven't seen it, it's still on Netflix. It's Attorney, what is it? It's Attorney Woo. I
The I think
remember
it's the
the.
Extraordinary
Yes,
Adventures.
thank you. The Extraordinary Attorney Woo, something like
Yeah,
that.
the extraordinary attorney.
And the actress is wonderful and neurotypical, and she actually was very hesitant. I don't know if you know about this. She didn't want to take on the role because she said it would. She didn't know how the autistic population
Would
would
feel like.
react to, right? So she was very hesitant. They also had a professional who works with autistic people to consult
I see.
for the making of that TV series. So to me, I actually enjoy the show. I actually watched it with my husband, and it actually gave me some new understandings and some points, discussion points that I looked at my husband, I said, oh, that's why I'm doing, that's why. Like, I do that. That's the reason why, And it's always so nice when you can learn from these TV shows or film, right? It helps you in your own journey to make discoveries. But the one thing about Attorney Woo is that, just like I said, there was no way she could, like, did really well and won her co court cases and then went on a date. And then it's just
Because
not,
you're not,
I don't know about you, you're younger than me, but I could not, I would
No.
need time to
It
decompress and
doesn't,
rest.
It doesn't make sense because it's not showing
Right.
the time needed to like decompress. So
Reset.
like there are days,
Right.
because like that's one main thing that I've noticed about like the autistic ADHD functioning
Right.
style compared to neurotypicals is that neurotypicals tend to have more ability to like produce at a same average output constantly. And for us, a lot of times it's like we have hyper-focus energy one day, and then the next day, like very little. And that might average out over a week, it might average out to a similar level, but it's really like it's like spikes and drops. And a lot of people don't really understand that. Like one of the things that bugs me the most that teachers used to tell me when I was younger is that, oh, well, you did it, you've done it before, you can do it because you've done it before. And it's and I didn't even understand that I had ADHD and that the reason why I couldn't do it the same as I did it in another time is that it's like the fluctuation and the inconsistency.
Correct. And so Attorney Wu, she was, of course, masking. So let's talk about stimming being portrayed in films and TV series. Obviously, there are high masking involved in all of the autistic characters. So we don't see Attorney Wu stim while she was in court. Same thing with the good doctor,
The good doctor.
right? I mean, you could see it was basically a different, I think they used like a flat affect.
Yeah,
That was the only thing, but the stimming and all this
Yeah.
hand movements,
That's
like
true.
stimming involving your body movement, it's not
Yeah, we
there,
don't see him stim. That's one big thing that's lacking.
Correct. So masking is another one that's often, like, I think misrepresented because it's going on, but it's not
It's not
really
shown, like
showing.
people aren't showing from the inside. Like that's what I've been I just started working on like a screenplay for my next project, and that's it's gonna be exactly about like different neurodivergent characters with different experiences. And one of the main things I'm my goal is to one of my main goals with it is to show the inside, like to show like that internal thought process. And I'm gonna definitely show masking. I'm gonna show like what it's like, what it's like to feel, to like think, like as you're actively masking, and to like how the process, the whole internal process that goes behind.
So what goes on behind closed door? Like the stimming and the explosiveness, because of course home is your safe zone. Like family members are your safe people, so a lot of times they get the,
Yeah, they just kind of, yeah, they know it's like kind of, even if they don't really understand why you're doing it, they know that, oh, it's a thing that you do. Like, it's funny, I have this story, like, when I used to live in Brazil, my dad would pick me up from school, and there was this lady that would sell peanuts at the corner, like, in one of the, and so she would say, it's just like, she basically what she was actually saying wasn't didn't match what it sounded like, but what it sounded like she was saying was arequico, arequim, which isn't even a phrase in Portuguese, but I thought that's what she was saying because it sounded like that. So I started like repeating, it became a vocal stim, and I would just say that a lot. And my parents never really understood, like for a long
Why?
time, why. They were just like, oh. And my dad would say, like, oh, it's, he would feel like it's just something my son says. And then he heard it one time when we were driving home. And I just remember like how he was like, oh my gosh, like that's what it is. Like it was, and there's just like this huge, yeah, like that's, and then because it's like it gets in our head, and then you know it's kind of like a comfort, it's kind of a soothing, like stimming and vocal stimming can kind of be, like a soothing mechanism. Like you latch on to something, like you just really like the sound of it, and then it's like when you're in a moment where you're a little overstimulated or like your thoughts are racing a lot, then it's nice to kind of like just let out that stim.
So you're going to do a film project, and you're autistic, and you have other actors, neurodivergent actors taking part.
I'm going to, yes, exactly. It's going to be all authentically cast. That's the goal.
That's amazing.
And of course, anyone listening to this or watching that is an autistic actor or has interest in acting, and if you have any other, if you're neurodivergent, if in any other way, like OCD, ADHD, dyslexic, anxiety, even, feel free to reach out to me. And yeah, I'll keep you in mind. We're still in the writing process, but when we get to casting, yeah, I'm open to auditions from any other neurodivergent actors.
Right, that's so cool. We have to turn that into a post, and I can help you share it
Awesome.
on the Autism Pathways account.
Awesome.
So that's super exciting. So we, as human beings, we don't know what we don't know. So we are at the point today where we need to help everyone change their thinking and mindset about neurodivergent people. All kinds of neurodivergent people. So I think through films like yours, you can give people new vocabularies. Instead of saying high functioning or low functioning, what should we say? What are affirming vocabularies? What's going on inside when we have certain expressions? What our eyes can see, it's definitely not explained well, internally, so you can communicate that authentically, obviously, because you have all neurodivergent actors. Yeah, should we talk about a couple of other movies that would be like, which ones do we
I
like?
have so I do remember it's not a movie, but The Big Bang Theory is another show that I do have some notes on, 'cause so basically Sheldon, his I did feel also like similar to the Big Bang, no, similar to Atypical, like Sheldon's traits, like Sheldon, like there was a lot about him that I could relate to. Like I found myself relating to Sheldon early on, and then it was even as I was watching that show, because I believe it first came out in the late 2000s, early 2010s, and that's around the time I got my diagnosis. But it's very interesting because, so I got my diagnosis in 2010, and I think I started watching the show a year or two before that, but I was already relating a lot to Sheldon. And then like I remember after I got the diagnosis and I started to understand that, oh, the reason I feel so different socially is because of this. Like, because I'm autistic. The reason why I have such high knowledge of certain topics is because special interest, because I'm autistic. And then I like connected the dots. I'm like, wait, these are the main two things that I relate to Sheldon about. And I remember this must have been like back in the early 2010s, and unfortunately I was still using the term, because that's what I had been diagnosed. I was using the term Asperger's, and I remember Googling Sheldon Cooper Asperger's. Sure enough, article after article, like essay after essay of people bringing up the hypothesis that Sheldon Cooper was autistic. And then I later come to find out, almost a decade later, like just a year or two ago, that the one of the creators of the show, Bill Prady, is in fact autistic himself, and he had a lot of involvement in writing the Sheldon character and like the traits, which I think again shows how when you have someone on set, even if it's not an actor, but at least, I mean, ideally you want to have the actor be autistic, but even if you have someone on set that's autistic, especially if it's someone that's involved in the writing process, it makes a big difference in terms of the representation coming across. And then I guess the quick negative notes that I have about that show is that even though Sheldon is like relatable, a lot of it, he does kind of play the savant trope a little bit too. And he does, which expects all, it makes people expect all autistics to be at that output all the time. And like, even those autistics that do have like really intense special interests like him, we still need time to rest. We still need time to decompress. And yeah.
So, you were talking about movies and films that are autistic coded. So we're calling it autistic coded, meaning you clearly see the portrayals of the autistic person in there, but it's the word autism is not mentioned. So that's what you were just explaining,
Yeah,
right?
exactly.
So, and then speaking about autistic directors or autistic actors, and Tim Burton is openly neurodivergent autistic, and his films, Coraline, Beetlejuice, Nightmare Before Christmas, right? Those are his creations, and we love them. I mean, I don't have any complaints about Tim Burton's movies. It's just so visually stunning. The pace is right, the dialogues, and you can watch it for autistic people. We can watch it over and over again. We always pick up something new. That's because it's just so rich, you
Yeah,
know, visually
exactly.
and just in all of the narratives. And
Was it him that did Wednesday too? Or
you
was
know,
that?
no, I don't think
Yeah.
that Wednesday is also autistic coded.
Yeah, she's
I
autistic coded.
love Wednesday. And Loop is another animation. Maybe we can talk about some animation. Loop is one, it's short. Loop is by Pixar, I think. Now, Loop was created by the maker of Loop has an autistic son. So I thought it was very short and beautiful. You can find it on YouTube. It's wonderful because it's about a non-speaking young girl. And I don't want to spoil it because it's so short, but I recommend that. I thought it was very nice because it shows how two human beings who are very, very different still found a way after a while, after 8 minutes, to like understand each other. So it is possible to do that. So another animation I want to mention is Inside Out. Of course, the second one just came out. So that's another one that I think, whether you're autistic or neurotypical or neurodivergent, you can relate to it. Yeah, do you have any other animations that you like?
Not that I can think of that are like autistic coded that I remember. Oh, SpongeBob.
Oh yeah, SpongeBob recently, the director,
Yeah, that's
said
right.
that
That
that's
SpongeBob is autistic.
oh, I love that's another one that SpongeBob is the one show that everyone in my family can watch. I mean, I don't get humor at all. Like, I just don't. get it.
Some of the, yeah, I could see that, like, sometimes, like, we would be watching it, I would be watching it, like, with my sister, or, like.
But I get SpongeBob humor. Like, I get that. That's what I'm saying. I normally don't get humor in films
Yeah, no,
and
in
TV shows,
general,
yeah.
yeah, it's true. Like, in general, I do feel that where a lot of times there's like a joke or something and people
Yeah.
laugh and I don't understand it.
I don't get it. You know, so, but I SpongeBob is great. Like, I find him looking funny and happy, and he makes me happy. He has that effect on me, you know, and I love it. I think it's ageless. SpongeBob is
Exactly. Yeah,
ageless.
I know. Yeah. I really like SpongeBob too. I used to watch it a lot, and yeah, I just like all the characters, like the story just always like seemed interesting to me. And then like I watched the movie when it came out, and it was like when they like went, I just found it so fascinating that they went like outside of the water, and it shows them like leaving like their whole world and like what it's like to see them outside of the water. And I just remember like, yeah, like they go on this road trip, and then it was like I just remember like I had a really strong like special interest in SpongeBob too. And now it makes sense. It makes a lot of
Exactly.
sense.
Well, you know, the SpongeBob characters, each one of them look very different, right? Their personalities are very different. It just makes me feel like it's okay if you look different, you behave differently, and you speak your own language. You know, that's SpongeBob,
Yeah. And
right?
it's exactly, and it's just like there's also something really great about it is that they're those characters that they just are like they're all different. They're not like portrayed to be like a burden or
Like bad, right?
like bad, because like that's one thing that bummed me out about the Big Bang Theory is that there's so many times in that show where Sheldon is like the burden, or like yeah, like they just the way they treat him sometimes, where they kind of bully him, or they like, or when they, oh my God, there's one scene that drove me crazy was when he's kind of like tired of like it, actually maybe this is one instance where it doesn't of course explain it, but it does, they do kind of touch on autistic burnout, because it is when he goes to take a train across the country or something, it's like the end of fifth season maybe, and he's just kind of fed up with like he's got all this stuff going on at work, and then like he's in this relationship with Amy, and then there's stuff with Leonard and Penny, and it's just I remember him being like very overstimulated by it all. And then he goes to the train station and he needs to just like, you know, take a break. And then Penny and Leonard go to the station and they're like, oh my God, there's like this scene like, oh, I guess they grow up one day, or we have to like let them go or whatever. And it's just like infantilizing the man who is just like overstimulated. It's not. And there's more scenes like that too. Like they do this whole like, oh, pretending like Leonard and Penny are like his parents or whatever. And I just remember that scene made me really uncomfortable. Well, I was like, he's a grown man. He's just like he needs like, yeah, he needs to take a break, you know?
I know. And that's, I mean, in my work, I see that a lot, that kind of treatment when the person is not able to use mouth words at all or consistently. And that's the kind of treatment that, you know, it's like we, as the adults, we watch someone grow up. But we don't grow with them. So, like, who's actually behind is the people surrounding this neurodivergent person, because we want sameness when we're treating them the same. through a negative lens and not realizing that we have to like change with we have to grow, right?
Yeah.
With the person. Yeah.
Another thing before we finish, I wanted to also mention about like the functioning labels, because there are a lot of people that still just aren't familiar with the language changes. And I mean, of course we both know, but just for those who might be listening and for those who might be curious, is that the, instead of saying high functioning, now we usually say low support needs or lower support needs, because the person is able to get through life on a daily basis without a lot of need for support, but that still doesn't mean that there isn't some need for support that's just maybe not as visible or as obvious. And then for those who used to be labeled as low functioning, we tend to now use high support needs, which highlights the fact that they may require more support to get through daily life, but it doesn't mean they can't achieve things.
So my advice for people, if you're trying to learn the neurodiversity affirming language, if you go to Instagram, there are a lot of posts that just summarize it in just one page, right?
Yeah.
So, like, for example, one post talking about this issue, I just saw that today from the account of the neurodivergent OT. They are from Australia, but it's just a simple, on the left-hand side, instead of this, and on the right-hand side, write this. So I can read that very quickly. For example, so this is negative lens or deficit base, can't sit quietly or still in the classroom. Instead of that, write it like this. Seeks movement and sound to regulate and learn. Okay. Example number two, can't make any friends. Instead of saying that, you can say prefers independent play. Example number three, struggles with transitions and change of routines. Instead of that, say requires support with transitions and changes. Example number four, is defiant and stubborn. Instead of that, you can say self-advocacy skills are developed consistently. Mm-hmm. Very clever.
Yeah.
Last example, won't follow instructions. And instead of that, capable when self-directed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So remember, autistic people are interest-centered. You gotta follow their interests.
Yes. Because
that interest drives everything. It gives you the language to meet them in the middle.
Yeah.
So that's a really important keep in mind. So, So instead of using low, high, just say clearly the support type.
Yeah.
Right. Because that would be more helpful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And it's more fair too, because it like acknowledges that people that need more support can still, you know, achieve a lot of things and be successful, even like with support. And that it also acknowledges that people that are like able to mask very well are not necessarily like they don't necessarily function all the time. Like myself, I can come across, I've been, oh my God, I can't even count how many times I've been called high functioning.
Can't be autistic.
Or that, yeah. Or everyone is a little autistic. There's so many of them. But because people don't see the struggle. They don't see the days where I can barely get out of bed. Yeah, where I'm just
That's right.
And that happens within the same week. Within, like, the next... Like, it'll happen literally.
Same day.
The same day. Like, Exactly. Like in the morning, I'll be like super productive and like I'll write like a bunch of new pages for my script and like maybe do a podcast episode. And then when the evening rolls around 5 p.m., I'm like barely able to like get out of bed or like go down to the kitchen to get some food sometimes. So yeah.
And I think lastly, to close this, I would say that just because you don't understand, it doesn't mean that you don't presume competence or you make decisions for this person. So just never assume, always involve the person, because that's important. I mean, in the that's the part that in the movies and films they capitalize on huge differences and disabilities and all the can'ts necessarily without explaining why that's happening, right? So I think in films and movies, they're not really emphasizing that this is a human being. That's very different, but still a human being with basic like rights, right? Right, human rights, right?
And that's someone that can understand too, like everything that's going around the person, like especially, I'll say this because I also because I like I know that it happens a lot, especially to non-speakers. Is that people presume incompetence to the level that they assume that the person doesn't know what's being said to about them or what's being said to them. And it's like, no, like people can understand. Like there's just so,
Movies and films should not make it worse for the population that they're trying to portray, right?
Yeah,
It
exactly.
should provide some clarity and to the very least, help people to be curious. Oh, is that how, why? Like, I need to learn more about this. That's interesting, right? Instead of just make it so dramatic to
And
sell,
it's just to
you know?
sell, yeah.
That's why Loop is, it's really short and beautiful. That just, that's the one. And it's animation, so.
Anything that's autistic made. Oh, I forgot to mention Heartbreak High. And that's one
All
that I
right.
really love. Like, if. See, that's an exception to, like, this trend of. I mean, I think it's trending in the better direction now, but I think Heartbreak High was, like, the first show that I saw that was, like, I was like, oh my goodness, this is a pretty good portrayal. And I feel like a lot of that had to do
Is
with
that the one,
Chloe Hayden.
from Australia?
Yes, exactly.
So the writer and the actress is autistic.
Yes.
That's why.
And I also read I watched this interview that the actress gave, Chloe Hayden, who's also a great advocate, and she was talking about how the director sat down with her and like had meetings with her and the writers had meetings with her, like we want to make sure we're getting this right. Is this accurate? Is this not? And then she was able to kind of guide them. She was allowed to like share her perspective as an autistic person.
That's right. That's right. I guess we should stop here because we can ramble
Yes,
forever.
it's true. We
But
can.
we'll do it again. We'll do it
Yeah,
again.
we should
And do
do.
it in the right account.
It's
But
okay.
I can move
I
it.
can all
I'll
publish
upload
this
it
on my
to
podcast
YouTube.
too.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you the recording. Okay. Well, thank you, George. And
Thank you.
thank you, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the recording if you check it out later. And we'll do this again another time.
Yes. All right. Thank
Bye.
you.